The NFL game is not played in Studio 66.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave. Dave Dameshek, what's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. I hope all's well in Studio 66, too. I wouldn't know because I'm not in there. No, like those who've come before me, the brave souls over man's recorded history. There was Paul Pierce. There was Willis Reed. There was Jesus. And now there is Dave Dameshek rising, and for no greater purpose than to record a new episode of the DDFP. I can see into there via Skype. I'm looking right now at one handsome Hank, finally back in Studio 66, but sadly, alone. I couldn't join him. All right, enough with his music.
That's enough.
We'll get to him. We'll tell you his story in a minute. Let me tell you mine first.
Dave, wait a second. Then, hold up a second. You say that you've risen again. As far as I can see, you've risen as far as putting your head on one pillow on a bed. Explain what's happening. Why are we seeing you in this state?
But you're right.
I would not say that you have made some kind of incredible comeback to do this.
Mm-hmm. I see. You're taking me literally. Yes. I meant figuratively. I've risen in the name of doing this show. And I'll be honest with you. We did one really good show earlier in the week with not one, not two, but three Hall of Famers from the 2017 Hall of Fame class. Those three guys are LaDainian Tomlinson, Terrell Davis, and Kurt Warner. I encourage you, nay, demand that you go and listen to that show on iTunes and or track me down my public page on Facebook and Twitter. You'll see links of each of these three guys describing what they consider to be the most memorable plays of their respective careers. This all in advance of NFL Network Eternal Red Zone Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, Eternal Red Zone, the 2017 Hall of Fame class edition. We're honoring all seven guys going into the Hall of Fame. But I really felt like, you know what, we could just let that podcast stand. I hurt my back. I'll tell you why in a second. I figured, you know what, we can get away with just doing one podcast this week and let everybody enjoy those tales. We can genuflect to the seven football guys about to get their gold jackets, and that'll be good enough for the audience. Then on Thursday morning, we heard that Ryan Tannehill heard his news. We did not know at the time of the recording how bad it was. It sounded grim, and I thought, you know what, our resident Miami Dolphins fan, Handsome Hank, and I need the kibitz in an emergency basis to try and figure out what to do. Late breaking, though, Ryan Tannehill, no structural damage. Good news, Handsome Hank. Mazel tov. High five, in fact. Wait, let me get my hand. There.
Is that it?
In audio. Yeah, there we go.
Think,
go ahead.
I think it worked.
There we go.
We did it!
There you go, Handsome. I want to high five you on behalf of all Dolphins fans. So congratulations to you. We'll dig in on that. Now to my infirmity.
Wait,
on
can
Sunday,
I one more thing though? Okay, yeah. So you spoke to the three Hall of Famers,
right?
And that, I mean, there's some incredible stories, right? Kurt Warner overcame, being a forgotten player, playing at a small school, playing in NFL Europe, playing in the Arena Football League, stacking shelves. You spoke to Terrell Davis, another late round draft pick. You know, came in on a team which had all those pieces with Elway, and out of nowhere became that missing piece. LT, maybe, you know, not quite so difficult for LT, but, you know, continuing the theme, they all overcame something, and yet you weren't able to overcome whatever has happened to you, and you weren't inspired in any way to try and follow in their footsteps.
I don't understand what you're getting at, sir. It's quite the opposite, 180 degrees, as a matter of fact. I'm broadcasting here and now. If anyone is listening right now, then they can testify on my behalf. I've shown up, Handsome Hank.
Right.
Sure,
You're using Skype and you're lying on your bed. I could show up to work like that as well, but I choose to go the extra yard.
Well, listen, there are some differences between you and me. You don't understand what it is, though, Handsome. You're a specimen. That's why we call you Handsome Hank. Those of us who are less than perfect, though, sometimes confront, you know, some imperfections. And I hope that and where mine comes from specifically this time around is on Sunday, I was putting my shoe on to head off to my daughter's baby Oprah. She's now playing basketball. I was going off to her practice, putting my shoe on, and I sneezed. Next thing I knew, I was on the floor and I couldn't get up because my back was out. And it is what? I don't know what's going on. Why?
The studio audience we have in here thinks that your tale of woe is hysterical.
I mean, I assume they're cries and gasps. They sounds like laughter coming through here. But either way, yeah, I was felled by a sneeze. And have not been able to stand for more than 90 seconds ever since. And, you know, like I say, you know, if that serves as some sort of inspiration out there for Ryan Tannehill or, you know, our countless citizens in the Czech Republic, terrific. I mean, that's part of what I'm getting at. I think you understand, Handsome, with great responsibility.
Great power, something like that.
Power and responsibility. It's about more than just you and me at this point. We have to press on.
I know, and that's what I admire is that you did it anyway.
Thank you. See, that's what we're doing. Thumbs up.
Yep.
So all right, Handsome. So we're doing the show here, and we'll make it brief. But I do want to kibitz a little bit,
okay,
about Ryan Tannehill, about your Dolphins, because as I've said innumerable times, you know, the greatest thing, and happy birthday, happy 40th to Tom Brady, aka the GOAT, the greatest thing that the football gods delivered to him and to his dear friend Peyton was an easy division. Both of those guys have played in impossibly easy divisions for the majority of their careers. And I figured in 2017, the AFC East had a real chance to pose an actual challenge, or at least more than one team to pose a challenge. Yeah, the Dolphins rose up there for a couple of years, and the Jets rose up there for a couple of years. But for there to actually be four or five actual tough games within the division, and I think if Ryan Tannehill is okay, and we'll see, just because there's no structural damage doesn't mean he's good and clean and ready to roll tomorrow. I don't suspect he'll be out there for a little while. But do you feel that this is some sort of harbinger of good news, of bad news for the Patriots, that things ain't going your way this time around, Tom Brady, Belichick, and company? This is the year of the Dolphin. Witness this little scare, and now we move forward, just like we're doing here with the DDFP. Is Damashek done? Is he going to be able to get up from his bed? Damashek presses forward. Can Ryan Tannehill follow Damashek's lead and lead the Dolphins now to brighter days coming up here?
Well, I think Ryan Tannehill might be very much like Damashek in that, yes, he'll get off his sick bed and do it, but I wouldn't necessarily equate what you're doing now to leading anyone to glory. I would say you're barely getting by, and I think that might wind up being what happens with the Dolphins as well. I think Tannehill will be back, but it doesn't bode well for him that he could be running out of bounds and not get touched and then be hobbling off the field in agony.
Yeah, very strange. What do you think? What was your first thought when you heard that, all right, at least we have Matt Moore? Or was it, let's dip in as everyone on Twitter and beyond immediately did, started volunteering who they think needed to replace Ryan Tannehill?
Well, my first thought, Dave, because I fancy myself a future general manager, my first thought was, look, let's be rational about it. Let's see what the options are out there. So I made myself a little list, and I wondered if you and I could go through it together.
I'm game for anything. Okay. Full disclosure, you know, I can't see it, but, you know, there's the sign hanging over the door there in Studio 66 that reads "No Jive."
Right.
Now, to be clear, it doesn't actually hang there, but in our
metaphorically
brain, in our mind,
it does. Yeah.
Right. Same thing as me metaphorically having risen to do
yes,
this show.
Exactly.
You know, No Jive. I'm all hopped up on Percocet. So whatever you want to talk about, I have a devil may care attitude even more than usual, Hanson.
Yeah, we can
talk, you know, Thursday, it's National Watermelon Day. If you want to talk about watermelon or other fruits contending for Fruit of the Year, we can go that path, too.
We could do
the
that.
The world's your oyster. But let's talk about your list.
Well, before we get to that, let's actually do this. What melon rankings? Where does watermelon rank on the melon rankings?
Well, among melons, I'll go water one.
Water.
Is cantaloupe? Is that
I think cantaloupe
a melon?
Is a type of melon, yeah.
You know what? Cantaloupe gets a lot of attention. And a lot of other people want to denigrate the honeydew. And in my book, the honeydew is superior. Now, you don't want to get the piece that's a little bit whiter in complexion.
Right, you want the orangey pinky one.
Wait, honeydew? Cantaloupe is the orange. The honeydew is the green.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I get confused by them as well.
Isn't it nice that while we're talking about cantaloupe and key lime, what we're really talking about are the uniform colors of the Miami Dolphins. It all comes together right there. I would say number two is the honeydew, and then I would go cantaloupe. How do your people say cantaloupe?
I don't think we do. I don't even think that's what they call that type of melon there.
I thought you were about to claim that they don't even make it in the UK.
No, they definitely make it. Unlike pretzels, which they have.
Or raccoons, according to you.
No, I promise you there are no raccoons in the United Kingdom. Outside of a zoological park.
Yeah, right. That's exempted, of course. Right. But anywho, all right, I did my three. Do you agree with that watermelon?
Yeah, I do. I like what?
I told you this one, Handsome, last year. This really works. Get yourself some kosher salt, some of the sea salt. Sprinkle it, not too liberally, by the way, but sprinkle a little bit of the salt, not the dumb junk out of the mm-hmm. little container. Mm-hmm. I mean, sea salt, some good stuff. Put that on your watermelon. I don't know why. It makes it sweeter. It doesn't make sense, but it does. Yeah. And thank me later. Anywho. Back to you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So here what I think are the Dolphins' options. If Ryan Tannehill's not available, and let's assume that maybe this could happen again, or maybe just it not being structurally or any less sound than it was this morning.
At the time of this recording, we do not know.
Right. So Matt Moore is their backup. He played the last four games of last season, including a horrific playoff loss to the Steelers.
Let's stop on him.
Okay.
Do you feel like? Because, as they say, one of the oldest football cliches is the most popular guy in town is the backup QB. I think Matt Moore, myself included, in the mix of people who would say Matt Moore might be the best backup out there. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo kind of changes that a little bit, a young up-and-comer like that. But you know, this entrenched veteran, among entrenched veterans, yep. the 21st century answer to Don Strock. David Woodley's backup in the 80s and Dan Marino's backup in the 80s, who was efficient when you threw him in there. The problem is so often with these guys is you realize after you see him for 2 to 4 games, oh, that's why he's a backup.
Exactly.
Because as our colleague Bucky Brooks put it best, the league will adjust to him. Once the defenses around the league make that adjustment, can that quarterback then make adjustments to counter what they're doing to stop him? And that's really what distinguishes backups from starting QBs, is the ability to continue to evolve. I feel like what we saw with Matt Moore was, anybody might say, oh, why don't they go with him already? Stop with this Tannehill experiment. I don't know if you know, Handsome, but Tannehill played wide receiver in college, and a lot of people used to point. Yeah, it's true. He did. He played. Yeah. He didn't have a whole lot of experience because back when he was in A&M, he played some wide receiver. So that stalled his progress as a QB. But anywho, jump ahead. A lot of people said, just put Matt Moore in already. He's the better. Then once we saw Matt Moore for an extended stretch for more than a game or two, you saw, he has a lower ceiling than Ryan Tannehill or any number of anyone else. So I think that now we can flush down the tubes the notion that Matt Moore is a viable option for a full NFL season.
I would agree. So I'd say you could go into the season with Matt Moore, but you probably can't do about more than about another 4 weeks before you have someone else.
And isn't it a great reminder, too, to expand the conversation to all 32 teams? You know, the idea that we don't, as I guess as people who spend the entire year talking about pro football, it's a little weird that we don't spend more time discussing the quality of each team's backup, because it's not everything, but it's massive. You know, I know that the Patriots saved that 1 year. Well, actually, even the Patriots, it seems like Tom Brady's always healthy, but of course he missed an entire year in odd eight. And then last year with the suspension, most every team is going to have to see the backup at some point. There are very few teams that the QB year in and year out is that. I mean, Eli Manning, I guess, is the looming exception to that, but you're usually going to see the backup at some point. And so the fact that teams don't put more stock in who they're putting into that position is interesting, or at least that we don't evaluate that more and try and determine the impact it's going to have on the team. The Percocet's making my head wander a little bit there, but I hope the point,
I get the point. And I think the Dolphins have that guy in Matt Moore.
It's not cutting through like a Ryan Mallett fastball, more like a Matt Moore floater that finds its way to the receiver.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, your point got there in the end, and that's all that counts.
Thank you.
All right, so then there are a few free agent options. One of them, I don't know if you've heard, but Colin Kaepernick's on the market. We've talked about it a little bit this summer.
Yeah, I've heard.
And I think Colin Kaepernick, Miami might be one of the best places for him, based on the fact that the owner of the Dolphins, Stephen Ross, recently formed in the last 12, 18 months, a foundation about athletes and using their platform to get equality. And I think he'd be one of the few owners in the NFL that isn't going to say there's no way this could happen.
I don't want to go into any xenophobic kind of stuff, but people have floated to me that's exactly why he wouldn't fit in Miami, Colin Kaepernick, that is, because an outsized portion of the population there is Cuban, and for some reason, I honestly hate to claim ignorance, but I don't know the specifics.
The specific of it is completely different to everything else, the reason that the 31 other teams have said they wouldn't be interested in signing Colin Kaepernick. On the one hand, as I said, Stephen Ross probably would be a very supportive owner for him, even to the extent I think Kenny Stills knelt before games last year and Stephen Ross basically got behind him and said, of course, he's welcome to do whatever he wants to do. Colin Kaepernick, before he played in Miami last year, the Dolphins played the 49ers, I guess, about halfway through the season, wore a Fidel Castro T-shirt the week before. It was, I think, just after Castro had died, and came out publicly with his support for him based on the fact that he was stood up for things himself. Look at that. Let's have the kiss. Let's do the kiss on camera.
You want to do the kiss?
Let's do the kiss on camera. There you go. That'll make you.
I don't know what that's about. I don't know who that was. But see, when you play hero, to the victor go the sport.
Exactly. So that's the Kaepernick Cuban connection that maybe makes him hard for some of the population locally in Miami to swallow.
How about from a football perspective? I don't even want to go down. We've had the conversation.
Yeah, we don't need to do it anymore. Already.
Of course, it's loco. I can't believe that. I believe it at this point, but it is difficult for me to accept that in a world where guys get employed in spite of so many other awful things, felonies and otherwise, that a guy using his First Amendment rights is somehow a pariah to a fan base. And I do not believe that the very vocal minority represents the vast majority of the fan bases. It's crazy to me. Now, I understand if the explanation is, we think our locker room is going to get an undue amount of questions about a non-football matter, and we don't want to deal with that because we don't know if this guy is even our starter. Why disrupt the locker room if he's going to be a backup? But if you're in this boat now, if let's say Tannehill went out, and by the way, this is something to keep an eye on. This is what a lot of people like me have said all through the summer. Invariably, a quarterback's going to get hurt, and then that will be Kaepernick's opportunity. Going forward, the idea that at this point, do I think Colin Kaepernick is a top 5 or a top 10 option in the NFL? No, but he is one of the 32 best human beings at quarterback. Ergo, why you wouldn't play? And by the way, the style of his play, it's not like he needs, well, he's got to do a deep dive on the playbook and it's going to take him 6 weeks to get up to speed. By the nature of his game, you can really shrink at least in the short term, shrink the playbook and throw him in there and let him run around and make some plays with his athleticism until he is up to speed with the playbook.
Exactly.
I don't understand why a team like the Dolphins wouldn't be all over this, especially I think if you skew defensive in the way your roster shapes up at this point. I think obviously you take a look at what the Niners did in their heyday 3-4 years ago and you apply that formula, done and done. And if you're right. Adam Gase, who has some track record or some has worked out at least what he'd like to do with Colin Kaepernick, you know, easy peasy in my book.
Yeah, and you got the running game there as well, which is how, you know, we're having Kaepernick in the backfield with a running game makes him a lot more effective than he was last year where he didn't really have that with him.
Precisely, and a good running game. Yeah, it all shapes up. It makes too much sense to me.
Okay, so here are two. Well, there are then three. This is my free agent list. Kaepernick's at the top of that. Then there are three names of guys who are retired. Jay Cutler has a background with Adam Gase, had his best season, you know, of the last 5 years or so with Gase.
He's always the one I point to. I agree with you. And Gase, by the way, also deserves, we were talking the last couple of weeks about QB whispers, guys who are allegedly QB whispers or offensive geniuses, defensive, because in one stop for one season, that coach has a good year. It's the Mike Martz effect, let's call it. You know, Adam Gase has, in fact, been productive with just about every QB at every stop that he's worked with. So, you know, that's part of the reason that if let's go back to before Thursday began, that's why I was high on the Dolphins. I think Ryan Tannehill
wasn't the Percocets.
Well, the Percocet, right. Yeah. Well, let's go like 75% Percocet, 25% Adam Gase.
Right.
And yeah, what figures to happen this year in year two for Tannehill with Gase. But Cutler is another guy, right? I feel bad for Jay Cutler at this point. I don't know if that's crazy for a multimillionaire who now goes from playing football to getting to talk about football for the rest of his life, making millions of dollars doing so. But he's barely retired, and he's like a punchline now. He had good seasons in the NFL. I mean, he wasn't just because his sitting face looked a little curmudgeonly. That's his MO for the rest of the time. The other concern I would have with Jay Cutler here in August is he's been retired for 3 months.
That's what I was going to say. He's on the Maurice Jones-Drew retirement workout plan. Something tells me that he hasn't exactly been keeping himself in
shape.
That
was my guess. That's what I was going to speculate too. Is it possible that by the next time we set eyes on Jay Cutler, he's just about unrecognizable because he's going about 325 now?
Could be. That really could be the case. I guarantee he hasn't shaved since June. And,
but by the way, wouldn't he be good if he really is willing to come out of retirement? There's no indication at this point that he is, but if the Dolphins called, I guess Adam Gase would be the difference, but same goes for it. We talked about it in March too. If Blake Bortles has had an up and down, I mean, how much stock you're supposed to put in a completion percentage at practice, I don't know, but Blake Bortles got beaten up a few days ago for an atrocious performance. Wouldn't you want Jay Cutler? Is Jay Cutler really that much a pariah that you wouldn't want Jay Cutler in the building? Wouldn't you? I it's surprising to me that you don't hear teams like that going after Jay Cutler, that the Jags at this point aren't chasing a guy like that. Anywho, but Jay Cutler, so all right.
Yeah,
he's
so Cutler's one. Another ex-Gase guy, and I'm going to rule him out, but I know that people will mention it, so we might as well just get it out there. Peyton Manning. You know, I think that would be a terrible idea, but that's certainly what people will say. They'll make the connection between Adam Gase and Peyton Manning and say that would be a good idea. It wouldn't, let's be honest. And then Tony Romo, obviously. But I just think it's too early for Romo. I think it's difficult for Romo to, let's say he looked at that Dolphins roster and said, and Tannehill's definitely gone. There's no question of him coming back this season. And Romo looked at that roster and said, you know what, that's got pieces there that I feel like I could be, these guys have such big egos. I feel like if I was there, I could take this team deep into the playoffs. I think that could happen in week 5 of the season and it could be a possibility. But given that Tony Romo is literally about to call his very first game in the NFL, I feel like he, just turning his back on his new role now and saying, actually, I'm going to the Dolphins. I don't see that happening for any team, even if Dak got injured tomorrow in practice. I just wouldn't see that happening now.
Yeah, I agree, and I know that Romo was conflicted, but the bottom line is, you know, he received warnings from doctors, don't do this again.
Right.
You really can't take another hit.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you, you know, Laremy Tunsil, you know, that I really think that in the top three things that might entice Romo would be to know that he's got his backside protected there.
He's got a decent offensive line. He's got a running game. He's got some good receivers. It wouldn't look like a bad option for you if you said, you know what, I really still feel the itch and I'd like to come back. But I don't necessarily think that now he could possibly do that.
Well, bottom line is, let's hope all is well. Let's hope to continue to hear good reports back on Ryan Tannehill, because not just because he seems like a nice guy, you know, you and I have gotten to kibitz with him separately and together a couple of times, and he seems like a delightful fella. And for Dolphins fans and beyond, but also, you know, I don't get what bit the football gods are playing here. Like, shouldn't the football gods be trying to treat us all a little bit better? You know, this to say that the chief opponent or the chief foe that might be able to take down the Patriots in their own division this year, to right out of the gate to hurt the QB, or is this to get inside the head of Tom Brady and company and say, Tannehill, we wanted to see how you'd react to this and think, oh, we're on easy street again. Let your guard down. Now it's going to be tough to ramp back up now that you realize Tannehill's good to go. Not unlike, again, that thanks to the inspiration from Southern California by Dave Damashek podcasting, in spite of having a bad back.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I'm not sure the 90 minutes that their worry might have caused in New England will be enough to really knock them off course, but
I don't know.
It's a good theory.
I'm reaching, Handsome. Yeah, we need hope. We can't just decide that the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl no matter what. We need to have some reason for optimism, and hopefully this report that there's no structural damage is just what we're looking for. More on the way. Now, on to another game, not the game of football, the game of life, this time the game of fictional life, Handsome. Game of Thrones. Now, you've been off in the UK. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Europe in general, you vacationed in Germany.
No, I was working in Germany. I vacationed in the United Kingdom.
I see.
And then I had to go to Germany for some meetings. It's always pleasant to be in Germany.
Where in Germany?
I went to three places. I went to Munich, or München,
München. Oh, München. München in summertime. Did you drink some of those big beers?
I had a big beer. It was a delight. Yeah. And then I went to Hamburg, which is a beautiful city as well, and Berlin, which is one of my favorite cities on the whole planet. So that was
that all the time. Is that I've never been to Berlin, and I've heard, you know, it's risen again, maybe inspired by Dave Damashek.
Like you, right, exactly.
They built the city up after WW2. I hear it's an extraordinary place and unrecognizable, obviously, pre-mid 20th century.
That's definitely true. Yes.
I mean, they leveled it. I don't know.
Yes, definitely unrecognizable from back then. You're right.
I don't remember. I don't know. I wasn't around back then.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing you generally say to the people there. Hey, I noticed there's a lot of new architecture around here.
That would be gauche.
Yeah, that's not the type of thing you would generally say. But it's good that you recognized it and called it out.
Well, I don't know if it's immoral. What that's somehow that's stepping on toes, or that would be hurtful. I like to remind you of what happened in another war sometimes, about 250 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what happened there, Handsome?
Yeah, I do. Your people were still in Hungary. Wasn't, I mean, you weren't a part of that.
Oh, you mean my people, bloodline.
Your bloodline.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. I bleed USA. I bleed the red, white, and blue. But back in the late 18th century, there was another war, and
No
compunction about bringing it up to you now.
You can't.
So I should. So going forward, Handsome, who, you know, is from one Europe nation, he is advising all within the sound of his voice it is inappropriate to mention Berlin's past.
Well, you've watched Fawlty Towers and the few episodes of that. There's one which the theme throughout is don't mention the war. John Cleese has an issue with accidentally dropping it into conversation.
Okay, good note. Good note.
Okay, the other war, the war between Jon Snow and everyone else, we can talk about.
It's sort of Cersei v. Daenerys now, right?
Yeah.
And by the way,
that's where it's at.
We're going to turn it over to the experts in just a second here. Eddie Spaghetti, Sully, and sideline reporter Savvy sat down and did a 3-person podcast. Mm. And they'll be doing it, and we'll attach it at the back end of the shows. We'll give you full warning. I have gotten I'm officially saturated with messages from the Czech Republic saying, please stop with the spoiler alerts or give a spoiler alert before you launch into discussion about Game of Thrones. So we will give that to you before. And this is officially
about to be a spoiler alert.
And then you'll get a few minutes on the back end with updates on our Game of Thrones Fantasy League. Game of Thrones League. We are playing Game of Thrones game. All right, let's talk about it.
Okay.
And Spaghetti and or Bartlett behind the glass. I can't see you. Feel free to chime in again if you'd like to. But Handsome, are you all the way caught up right now?
I'm all the way caught up. So I couldn't – when I was in the UK, it's pretty cool because it's not many shows that, you know – TV shows as opposed to sporting events that they show live across those countries, but they will show it the first airing, I guess, that will be on HBO here, which is like 2 a.m. there. So that's if you want to watch it, you've got to stay up on Sunday night till 2 a.m. to watch it. And I was not that desperate to, and I don't think I even had access to the TV station that I could have watched it on. So I flew back from Europe on last Saturday. And on the plane, by coincidence, they had the previous season of Game of Thrones, and I didn't have anything else to do, so I watched the final 2 episodes of that. Then landed.
Great way to get caught up.
Exactly.
Right?
I lit the fire for myself. Then I landed, and I
not
landed.
Unlike the guy lit the fire in the
under
bowels
the little girl.
Of,
not that far.
That sounds dirty out of context. No. The one guy with the mark on his head.
Yes.
See, this is where the experts need to chime in. The guy who got the circle carved into his head to show his fealty. Whatever it's called.
Did he make time with Cersei at one point? Was he?
Correct.
He was her husband briefly, wasn't he? Do you remember that
yeah.
like a few seasons ago? He would she would sneak him into her chambers as well. If you and that's what you know, but that's what they
that's her
said.
Former bedmate.
Yes, and then he went off and became a you know he was obviously so traumatized by his time with Cersei that he turned to religion to cleanse himself.
Mm-hmm. That's spot on. Yeah.
So okay, good, and that's the first time I've ever actually been on top of any plot points in Game of Thrones.
Sex
and
in the one
blew
hole.
The. she blew the joint. The kingdom come. They all
that's,
died.
That's right. That's what. That, and that's why he decided he had to turn to religion. But yes, you're right.
Oh, that's extra funny on Percocet hands. keep the blue jokes coming.
Okay.
I like it. Now let's advance to Cersei and her quest for love. She makes her love on Jaime once again, earning Damashek and Chris Harris Jr.'s Game of Thrones team great points for their lovemaking. But then at the same time, or even just prior to that, she promises her lady parts to Euron Greyjoy.
I know. And that doesn't feel like a good idea. I think she's counting.
By the way,
she's counting on him getting in a nasty accident.
Yeah, a lot of people out there are comparing who Euron Greyjoy reminds them of, what he looks like and everything. I'm going with Bam Margera. Are you a fan
yeah,
of...
I know. I'm not a fan of it, but I know exactly who you mean, and that's a direction that he could be seen as.
I, you know what? I didn't like him last year. I mean, not just because he's mean. That's that. If you judge people on how mean they are on Game of Thrones, and you don't like them for that, then you're going to be in some trouble. But I thought that when I first, I was, I don't need this character. He'll be killed off quickly. And now I enjoy him quite a bit. I like his moxie. Well, see, I like him. I like it. I like the two hands over the head.
Yeah. Waving. I like the bit where he landed. He came down on his like ramp that he rolled off his ship, looking like a crazy monkey. He was like, ah! the take another Percocet, Dave. I like that.
I'm
like
gonna
this
have
laughter.
More. I love it. Coming back like a monkey.
Tell me who you think, because Game of Thrones has been very good at creating meanies, like mean people. So you have Joffrey, who everyone loved to hate, and he was he likable? I don't know whether he necessarily had Euron's likability. Ramsay, who was crazy. I liked Ramsay. I got to say, I liked some of the just how mean he was. There were bits where he went a little over the top, but I also loved watching getting eaten by his dogs at the end, which I was reminded of last weekend. And then now Euron. What do you, in terms of meanness rankings? Where do you go 1 through 3?
Yeah,
and is there anyone I'm missing off the list as well? I'm trying to think if there's anyone. I've...
Yeah, Spaghetti. Who is that? Are we missing it? Well, Cersei's pretty mean, and so was her father.
Yeah, but not. They're different type. They're not like crazy mean. Well, maybe they are. I don't know.
I don't know how you would quantify this conversation. How you exactly would gauge this? Because Joffrey in a fist fight, I would defeat. You know, I could beat up Joffrey.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like who could construct the meanest thing they could.
That's
do.
What I'm. Right, that's what I'm saying. Who would you least want to tangle with? Who would you least want to hear?
Yeah, he's not a meanie, though.
Don't
I mean,
be,
like, what's he?
Don't be that way, Spaghetti, with the Night King. That's the you don't, please, play into the spirit.
I think Euron is for
real.
Who
would you want to hear? Who would you not want to hear, like, through the grapevine in Westeros? Like, I don't know if you heard, but so-and-so is PO'd at you, and he's coming to get you.
Exactly. Or right now, in the behind the glass, there's an axe coming through the door.
It's Euron.
And you're like, oh, my God, someone's trying to get in. Which of those three guys would you least like?
Euron. Euron in the books is, I was just telling Bartlett, is like a demigod, and he's magical because they're alluding to it in the show, but he's traveled the entire world, and he sailed all the 14 different seas. And along the way, he supposedly picked up magic, and he's kind of friends with these warlocks, and that's the reason why his ship Silence came out of nowhere. So he's a guy that's he's pretty powerful.
Hmm. Okay.
And so, if he
came through the door now, would he just slit your throat, or would he do what Ramsay would do, which is like cut your toes off and toast them and feed them to you and stuff like that. Like that's because I'd least like to see Ramsay. Ramsay would be the one. I don't want to get eaten by dogs. I don't want to eat any of my body parts. There's all kinds of reasons I don't want Ramsay to be the guy that would capture me.
Toe is the, if that was the deal, I would, I would give the toe right now if that was where it's
right.
Top.
Well, I mean, against other
Ramsay
options,
Ramsay likes
yes.
to take much worse. Well, yeah, exactly. He likes to do much worse. Hey, by the way, I just wanted to let you know, apropos of nothing, my dream is finally coming true. I meant to say this at the top. I've always, as you know, I've always wanted to do at least one show pantsless, and today that becomes a reality.
Can you prove it?
I could, but, you know, this is a family
show. Yeah,
it's
a family show, you're right.
Ooh.
No, that's enough. That's far enough down the bed. If you're listening, you're not really going to understand what's happening, but Dave has been lying on a bed on Skype this whole show. He gets kissed by people occasionally. It's pretty exciting to watch.
Yeah, it's this really is we got some house going over here right now. Earlier today also before we got going here, we delayed it by a few minutes. Because the nanny fell down in the driveway holding 1-year-old football baby girl, fell down in the driveway, and then told me that she was stuck there. Nobody came to help her. Well, nobody was here, of course, so I don't know who was coming to get her. She said that she laid in the driveway for about 8 minutes. So imagine that sight.
Is there any truth to the rumor that the nanny is lying next to you in the bed? I would like it if she just suddenly came into shot and was like, yeah, I'm lying here too as well. Been lying here for 15 minutes and no one's asked me a question yet about the Dolphins quarterback situation.
some blonde scafoots came through here, as you saw a few minutes ago. You know, I don't know what's going on today, but yes, it's all surreal to me. Is it was that a real person that came in?
Or I don't know.
A vision created by Urine Greyjoy,
right,
who's a demigod. I don't know what's happening anymore.
Maybe it was one of his warlock friends.
I don't know. Don't know at this point. What did you think of, I enjoyed that. Well, the thing that was weird, talk about surreal. Did you feel sad for Arya, seeing her brother and him not seeming to care at all?
Because Sansa.
Yeah.
Right? Not Arya.
Or whatever her name is.
No, I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing, because Arya was, I don't know whether it was this episode or the last one, met her pet dog, her wolf, and that seemed a little strange as well, because I didn't really understand what was going on there. But
those two things are analogous, right? I mean, that's what we're supposed to see.
Maybe, I don't know. That you're reading deeper into it than me. Yeah, but he's a strange dude, let's be honest. He was, I mean, imagine if you hadn't seen a family member for a while and they kept talking about how they're the three-eyed raven. In fact, her response to him was something like, what are you talking about? What is the three-eyed raven? Which is exactly what I was thinking at the time. And my understanding of his role in this, he's Bran, right? Not Bronn. My understanding of his role in this whole thing is very, very limited. I get he can talk to animals and turn into, you know, control them with his eyes kind of flickering. But I don't really understand how that's going to go a lot further. I mean, if he's that good, if he's that good at it, just turn and do the White King, like flick your eyes back.
Yeah,
be the White,
the
Night
here.
King, and then turn around and say, guys, we're going back to the cold. And then that would be, it would be, all be over.
Well, right, yeah, if you know what's coming anyway, then just listen. Yeah. If it's inevitable that the White Walkers are going to kill us no matter what, then just spare me. Like, I don't want to spend my last days hiking up to the wall and beyond and being all cold just to get killed anyway. I'll just stay where I am and let them come find me, right?
Exactly. I'm just going south, as far south as I can. I may even get in the ocean.
Hey, three-eyed raven, let me know what's coming up here. I wouldn't care for that, and nor would I care for if I were Sansa or anyone else. He so casually drops, I'm sorry, by the way, what Ramsay done to you. Like, well, what were you watching that for,
right,
man? You're my
freak. You're a freak.
I mean,
what are you
on.
Doing? Yeah.
Now you're weighing in? Like, oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, I mean, I saw everything that was happening, you know,
yeah.
Sorry that all happened.
Oh, and by the way, I can control things as well. Well, why didn't you control him and stop him from doing those things? I had other stuff going on.
Yeah, if I take three more Percocet today, I think I will become the three-eyed raven.
I don't think you're five. I think right now you're five eyes.
Well, whatever many-eyed raven I turn into, look out, because I'm going to make things better for everybody. All right, Handsome, what do you think? Is that enough? Have we done
I think
enough?
That's enough. I don't think our understanding of Game of Thrones can take us much deeper into this conversation.
I agree. We need Mauricio.
How's your team doing, by the way? Your team's suddenly doing well. Mine isn't. In fact, I do want to talk a little bit more. The Sand Sister, I thought I'd made some good choices. So I really was trying to create a familial atmosphere on my team. So I drafted the Hound with my first pick. Went straight back and got the Mountain, so I've got two Clegane's on my
team.
That feels
like, that feels like playing in fantasy football terms. That feels like playing two running backs that are playing each other.
I realize all of these things now, but I was sitting in a pub in England, and I wasn't really, I'll be honest, I wasn't concentrating that hard on a fantasy draft of a fantasy program.
Now, so I give credit, though. The people who concentrated the most during that draft were Kyle of Good Morning Football and Chris Long of the Philadelphia Eagles. They toiled the hardest.
They really did. They really did. They and I sent some stupid things in the text chain we had going during it to shake things up a little bit. And to their credit, no one told me to shut up. I was also tweeting or texting at what would have been 2 a.m. your time, which was the time that I was, you know, excited about
weirdest draft I've ever participated in.
I think
in.
By far, just because of the, I was like, wait, this is, I'm talking to Chris Long at this point about whether wolves are naked or not.
Right.
those type of exchanges were odd.
Let's review that quickly. And so
Colleen, I have it here actually.
And John Gonzalez were in a bar in Rome.
Who
you were in a pub in the UK. Chris Long was in a Manhattan hotel room that was haunted. That, or at least he felt it was haunted. Was afraid it was haunted. I think that we could say, and then there were plenty of us out on the West Coast as well. So various time zones, various obstacles to overcome, be they inebriation or ghosts. So, you know, everybody had their things.
Everybody, exactly.
Let's not make excuses after the fact. The bottom line is Damashek and Chris Harris Jr. sit in second place now and are positioned quite well. Jamie Lannister maneuvering, a general, a true general. He kills. By the way, I got points, Spaghetti. I also got points for Lady Olenna killing Joffrey, right?
Last season? Yeah. Two seasons ago? I mean, I was not part of it, but I assume you should have, yes.
No, I mean, I should get those
you
points.
You should
get
them again.
Oh, you mean retroactively.
Well, because she owned up to it.
That's a good point. I could DM them again. I followed them a lot this week because I feel like I was not given the fair amount of points for what Sam has done. This grading system, and I don't want to crush the fantasizer. They've been great to us. But they go like strictly based on the show. So if Sam was told, for example, that he's not getting a promotion or like a compliment, you don't get the points for the deed you did. So I guess I could see if, well, hey, Olenna admitted to killing Joffrey, you know, three seasons ago, you could be in luck for some more points.
But she
I'm
got
gonna miss that old bird. She was, you know, she was
great.
Bond girl.
Yeah, Diana, you know, Rigg. She was one of the you know, she's one of the hottest women of all time. She's up right up there. Maybe not so much any longer.
No, well, certainly not now. Not after that glass of wine.
Not after that glass of wine.
All right. You know what, handsome? Let's call it a day here.
I think you should. You should. Yeah.
I'm going to send up to the clouds and roam around there and see what's going down.
See if you can find out who the lady was that kissed you as well.
That's my
first thing to do is to find out.
I just want to confirm that you. Did see that.
Yeah. It wasn't a vision. Some woman came into your bed and kissed you.
All right. So for Handsome Hank, this is the Five-Eyed Raven, Dave Dampart. and now we'll kibitz with you later in the week. I will say, don't forget, because it's great stuff and not because anything that I had to do with it. Rather, it's the greatest moments of seven Hall of Famers coming up Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, NFL Network, Eternal Red Zone, the 2017 Hall of Fame Class Edition. Set the DVRs now and or look for it on Facebook and Twitter. It'll be out on the NFL handle at some point over the next few days here. Enjoy the Hall of Fame proceedings, the return of preseason football. That we'll kibitz with you later in the week, at the start of next week. In the meantime, here comes Eddie Spaghetti, sideline reporter Savvy, and Sully with the first ever Game of Thrones mini podcast at the back end of the DDFP. Game of Thrones.
We have a fantasy league.
The Game of Thrones game.
Dave. Thanks, Sheck. Eddie Spaghetti here now. Sideline Savvy is here, finally. What happened last week?
Let's just ask Sully. Let's throw that question to Sully because I was ready at 9 a.m. sharp. Me and you both, yeah. Eddie Spaghetti.
Well, Sully, ninth place Sully.
Ninth place
cannot
Sully.
That time.
Ninth the place unsullied. Sully.
A little busy, you know.
Is time here.
Yeah.
That's what they all
busy.
Say because we are not busy
juggling,
at all.
Juggling a few podcasts. So
let me just tell you that it almost became the unsavvied.
The unsavvied. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, if it wasn't for me being the unsullied already, then I
but
I
then
guess,
again.
I guess you could take that, but.
I don't want to be in that place.
Damashek
so.
Was the one handing out the team name, so I think you need to take it up.
All right, but we always have time for Game of Thrones, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So quick rundown of the standings. Still in first place, Kyle Brandt, K. Adams, 220 points. Damashek and his friend Chris Harris, second place, 210 points.
Unbelievable Jeez. Jump.
Eddie Spaghetti, Edard Spaghetti, third place, 190. And we got the rest of the teams following there. So those are the top three teams. Sully, ninth place, what's going on?
Yeah, Tyrion finally started talking this week. My number one pick in the first round, so that definitely helps. Yeah. I'm still not worried. It's still early. Tyrion's got a lot to offer. Bran too, finally getting back home to Winterfell. I think he's going to bring a lot on the fantasy side, and obviously with the plot, the guy's going to has yet to unveil the R+L plot with Jon and Daenerys.
Very true. Savannah, anything stick out in our league standings to you right off the bat?
Really? Just Dave's jump up to number two. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
The jump by Damashek is something. He's the last guy you want in first place.
Does he even know he's up to two?
Probably not. But once he finds out, he'll be bragging nonstop. Yeah. So his team with Chris Harris Jr., major jump there. And I guess Damashek's a real player in our league there. Mm-hmm. But now let's go to the episode three.
Yep.
Crazy.
Great episode. And the biggest point for me, at least, was the meeting of Ice and Fire.
For sure.
That was awesome.
And the Red Witch referenced that as well. Like, I brought together Ice and Fire, so that's kind of bringing it full circle.
I said it was my favorite scene and the best scene, that initial dialogue scene when he first walks in to her own, like, makeshift room with her throne, like the Dragonstone throne,
right,
which could be better than the Iron Throne itself.
Yes.
That meeting to me was almost like you have, like, chills. You had Tyrion speaking for Daenerys. You had Davos speaking for Jon. And to me, that was, like, an awesome 10, 15-minute, like, of dialogue right there. And I was like, this is what we waited for.
It really was, and her explanation of Khaleesi was like so like powerful, and all the was listing off all these things, and then you had Jon Snow's, which was actually pretty didn't live up to his, you know, what he could be, I guess, or what could be described as.
Yeah, I think Davos is a little bit lesser of a court. He's more of a court jester and not quite up to par.
So that was funny
with the proper court. I guess
protocol,
right?
Sure.
But yeah, I thought that was that was big coming straight out of the gates. The meeting right at the start was pretty huge. Something that we've been building up for the whole series, basically.
Big time. Yeah.
But I thought a big moment obviously was Bran returning as well.
Yeah.
To Winterfell.
Bran or the Three-Eyed Raven now.
Three-Eyed Raven. And what everybody's been kind of buzzing about is how he finally sees a family member for the first time since, I guess, basically Hodor died.
Right.
And nothing. Just blank nothing on his face. And I think that kind of symbolizes that he's pretty much A, seen some stuff.
Oh yeah.
And B, he's fully the Three-Eyed Raven. He's not.
Oh yeah.
Sure. You got to feel bad for Sansa because you have Bran come back and he's like, well, no, I'm the Three-Eyed Raven. And then next week's episode, a little mini spoiler: Arya returns and she's going to be like, well, I'm not Arya. I'm no one. So yeah. Sansa's like, what happened to my family here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's fighting with Jon. He's like, Bran's a Three-Eyed Raven. Arya's an assassin with no name.
It's so much has happened since Sansa's, the family has been rekindled.
Right. Sansa's only the semi-normal one, and she's gone through a lot of changes. She's dealing with Littlefinger, but she's also grown a ton, and they mention it as well. And Tyrion shows a little bit of care for Sansa, his former wife, and saying, like, you know, hey, how she's doing, checking up with Jon.
Yeah.
And she's actually doing pretty well.
So let me run through a couple of the big plot points. So whatever one sticks out to you guys, just, you know, shout out. I thought that was a big moment.
Yeah.
Sam cures Grayscale. We got that. We have the Lannister.
Should be points for you.
Look, I've done my duty. I've complained. I've messaged on Twitter. I've written emails. They don't want to give Sam any points. They don't want to help.
That's crazy.
It is, right? He
come on.
He cured the worst disease there. He cured a major character. He did his job while cleaning up all the junk he was doing there as, like, the low guy in the totem pole. And he gets no love in our league. And, I mean, his time will come.
And I feel like Khaleesi's going to have some props to give for that. You know, I think that's going to come full circle for Sam.
Oh, yeah, sure. For sure. Yeah, I mean, he still hasn't fully come to fruition with a lot of things that he has with the Dragonstone. I feel like he's going to journey north again and eventually help out Jon with the Dragonstone.
Right. So a couple more plot points. The Lannisters take Highgarden, the richest city in Westeros. Mm-hmm. Unsullied did take Casterly Rock. Sorry, but it's empty now.
A couple spots we haven't really seen that much in the series, if at all.
Right.
I think it's the first time. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Cersei will eventually kill Tyeen Sand.
That was crazy.
Crazy scene.
That was a crazy scene.
Cold
which
blooded.
I knew was when they were walking in. I was like, oh, it's about to go down. Cersei is
about to hit the fan.
And right.
I was really afraid to watch the scene. I was thinking I was going to have to close my eyes.
I was thinking she was going to go with the skull crush, but yeah. She
what
went,
she did
went
is probably pretty more. It's pretty brutal.
You got to watch your daughter just
Right. And but the more, I guess, positive death scene was the Queen of Thorns, Olenna Tyrell.
Amazing.
Got the last word before, and she just chugged that wine with the poison in it.
Amazing. Like, she has my MVP vote for this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good vote for MVP. And one thing, a little branch off of that, was that she tells Jaime that she was the one that killed Joffrey.
That's why she has...
Tyrion.
Right.
She said, watch out, Cersei's going to be your downfall. And now it's like, well, Tyrion really didn't do it, and Cersei wants to kill Tyrion. Maybe Jaime's starting to think in his head, well, maybe Tyrion's not the bad guy.
Right.
Maybe it is Cersei.
I think Jaime is going to end up teaming up with Tyrion at some point in the series. They have to fight the White Walkers, but it might come against their sister before it's all said and done.
Yeah. Because Cersei's really, you know, and... in a really 2017 way of saying things, feeling herself these days.
Oh, yeah. Yo, she's feeling herself. Yeah, she's feeling herself.
She is.
So you mentioned MVP. Your MVP is Olenna Tyrell. Is it because of that scene? It's because her just entire character and all the quick, witty stuff?
Yes, of course. I mean, her entire character. But in and itself, her just throwing it out there that she's the one that took down Joffrey. I mean, and just ruthless, you know, like, and saying, and tell Cersei because I want her to know. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to miss her.
Yeah. She was one of the wittier, quick, snarky characters.
I hate to see her. Yeah, that's rough to see her go.
Like that, losing your the richest city, like you're going down like that, and she's like, all right, well, whatever. I have my run.
You see Jaime walking through Highgarden, and you see just the one shot of some soldiers just counting up mountains of gold. They're back, and I think that's what the writers are kind of insinuating is they might be propping up the Lannisters a little more than what they actually are, but. They seem like they're
the Lannisters
they're
have a lot of debt to pay.
They got big Mama Mo on their side right now.
Right,
that's true.
So who's your MVP then, Tully?
Ooh, I gotta go with the Lannisters. I gotta go with Cersei.
She took down.
She had the big takedown of the series so far this season, and taking down Highgarden, and she's got the money on her side. She tricked Tyrion,
right?
And they basically gave them their homeland, but. It turns out that's not that big of a deal. Jaime's got a plan for that.
It feels like Daenerys is so far in the lead, and now she like blew the 3-1 lead.
Right.
It's
crazy,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's 3-3 right now.
Tyrion's plan of sneaking through the sewage, I mean, that could have worked so well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that could have been – I mean, it did.
But it was
to no avail.
It was like Snoopy, and they pulled the football straight from him. Like,
he thought he had a great plan.
But it – oh, man. Poor Falcons. And poor Seahawks. But yeah, no, seriously, I pulled the ball from him.
Yeah.
And it turns out that wasn't that big of a victory.
Well, my MVP would have been the Lannisters, but since you picked them, I'm going to go with Jon. Because the thing in the situation Jon was in, Jon, he's a Stark, well, Stark blood that had to go south, never bodes well.
Right.
He goes into the home of Daenerys, and he's not going to bend the knee. And he's like, listen, there's a real big problem up north. I know you like the Iron Throne, and you want that in King's Landing, but there's something a couple miles north that's way worse than any of that. And he stood his ground. Him and Davos, they stood their ground. He's going to get what he wants, which is digging for the Dragonglass. So I think that was a pretty big moment for Jon. Mm-hmm. And little, like, the sneak peek of the dragon flying over his head, it's like, oh, maybe that's a little tip to cap. Maybe his heritage is, you know, not what we think it is. It could be
there's no way.
Family of dragons. You don't think so?
No, there's no way. He's a Targaryen.
Oh, okay. All right, okay, you agree. Then.
Yeah, no, he is.
That's
it
what
is.
I thought.
He's officially a Targaryen. We know this.
So to wrap things up, like I said, episode 4, The Spoils of War, Arya meets Sansa. You have any big predictions of that? They mentioned war in the title. Is there a battle going on, Arya and Sansa?
I feel like there is going to be a battle. I don't know where, but the pacing of this past episode was perfect, and they're not going to slow it down at this point. They don't have time.
I mean.
Do you have any big things coming up in this episode you excited about?
I don't know. I mean, this really – the Jon Snow, I mean, I'm always looking forward to what's next for him.
Sure.
I mean, especially with the Dragonglass, I think he has the good on his side.
Right. Seeing Jon in a sunny environment for the first time, he's so negative, but seeing him in a sunny environment was great.
Yeah.
What I'm looking forward to is to see Arya now in Winterfell with Sansa, not because of their relationship, but because what it means for Littlefinger. So,
absolutely.
I think
he had a little nasty look, which he normally does on his face.
I think
Sansa was walking her off to see Bran.
Yeah, I think the clock's ticking on Littlefinger there, but. I'm pretty excited for this episode, as I am for all episodes.
Right.
So, all right, guys, good stuff.
Good stuff.
Looking forward to next week. All right,
really pleased to join this.
I know. It's good. I'm ready.
Recurring guest.
I think we have our time slot.
Yeah, I think we have our time slot, and I think the Unsullied are coming back up from 9.
I don't know about that one.
As long as Dave's on.
Don't call it a comeback.
As long as Dave's not first anymore, I think we'll all be happy.